Off the top, dope.
Yo, what's up, guys? I'm Michael, and this is Off the Top Dope, taking you back to some of the most and least dope moments in professional wrestling history. Switching gears a little bit today, rather than ranking wrestling history, I wanted to read you guys something that I wrote about my own history with wrestling, my own life, with my feelings on Sting. I mean, no, I've never met Sting. I'm not his friend or even a super distant family member, at least not that I know of. But I really wanted to try to organize my thoughts and write them down and sort of pay tribute to a guy who has always been there for us. He's always given it his all. He's been a constant in our lives for as long as any of us can remember. And I want to read this and let this sort of be like an introduction. And then tomorrow, after I've had time to dry the tears I'm sure I'll shed after Revolution, I'll give my thoughts and feelings on the end of Revolution and the end of Sting's career. His final match, guys, the end. Farewell to an icon. Today is Sunday, March 3rd, 2024, and we are nearing the end of an era. Just a handful of hours from bidding farewell to an icon, the final match of the absolute legend, Sting. I found out about wrestling back in 1996 one night when I was flipping through channels on TV and stopped when I saw the action, the crowd, the ring, everything about wrestling pulled me in. It was like the greatest fight scenes in all the movies I watched with my dad, but it was a sport, and that's what the entire show was. I couldn't believe this was a thing. I don't know for sure if Sting was the first match I had seen. I can't say with any certainty, but I can say with absolute sincerity that from the moment I first saw Sting appear on our TV, that I was completely hooked on wrestling. Naming exactly what it was about this one man that drew me in would be difficult. I had missed the Surfer Sting run. I was starting fresh witnessing this enigmatic force leveling the playing field each week as he came to the rescue of the good guys, decimating every heel in the dastardly NWO with his trusty black baseball bat, but never a word spoken. No ambitious declarations, no motive ever uttered on camera, no promo, no words. And as I sit here thinking back on this time, this performer, this era, this man, I have thousands of words to describe the feeling. We all do. We all remember. But no words will ever be adequate enough to explain what Sting meant for so many of us. WCW had been building a huge program with Sting at the center of it. He was a shark circling the waters that Hollywood Hulk Hogan had carelessly chummed with his betrayal of everything that he had stood for. He turned his back on the WCW fans. He'd formed an organization hellbent on destroying all of the good in World Championship Wrestling, and Sting stood alone in his battle to make the wrong things right. Starrcade 97 was the second pay-per-view we had ever bought, and I was super excited to say the least. My dad and I ate nachos straight off the baking sheet on the coffee table in front of the couch as we watched match after match, the clock ticking down to Sting battling Hogan for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. When that moment finally came, you remember that entrance, you could feel it. It felt like the entire world was at stake. In that moment, Hulk Hogan somehow felt like he was the biggest villain the human race had ever seen. Even now when I go back and watch that entrance, Sting's entrance, it fills me with so much. People say it had that big fight feel, but I don't think even big fights have enough build up and feeling to match that. Maybe I'm just very biased because this was such a big moment in my childhood, but it was completely fucking real to me. Now, you can say whatever you want about the finish of that match, about Sting's in-ring performance. Say whatever you want, but you cannot tell me those entrances after that big of a build-up didn't give you goosebumps. I'm 33 years old now, and I still honestly get chills watching Sting slowly make his way to the ring that night in 1997. Sting remained a favorite of mine throughout the remainder of WCW's history, but unfortunately about 2 years after the company folded and was sold to Vince McMahon, and all of that history I covered in episode 2, the What Killed WCW episode of this show, I stopped regularly watching wrestling in about 2003. It just wasn't the same anymore. As I grew into my teenage years, my interests changed. I remember one night I was in my bedroom and my dad called me out into the living room yelling, "Hurry!" I got there fast to see a six-sided ring on the TV screen, and in the center was my childhood hero, Sting. My dad was watching TNA, and as ashamed as I am now in my journey through wrestling, I have to admit that I've never seen an entire episode of TNA or Impact. It just came at a time that I had other interests in my life, you know, music, girls, things like that. Looking back now, I can't believe I passed up an entire generation of wrestling. I missed so many opportunities to see Sting in TNA. Who knows how hooked I could have been, what additional memories I could have made? I had tried watching wrestling so many times throughout the years. When I was in my early 20s, all I wanted to do was watch old matches from the 90s on YouTube, because at the time, YouTube was like the Wild West. I mean, people uploaded copyrighted stuff like crazy, and it would be up there for a long time until WWE decided to finally exercise their rights to the content. But at the time, I was reliving so many Nitro, Thunder, WWF New Generation, and Attitude memories that I saw no need to check out current modern-day wrestling. Whenever I ended up trying to watch Raw or SmackDown when I happened to catch it, it just became crystal clear that the product was just not for me anymore. Wrestling had changed while I was gone. It had morphed into something that I had no longer cared for. I can't pinpoint exactly what it was, but it was just so bad to me. No one was believable. The top stars just seemed like a joke. It just wasn't for me. That was almost a depressing realization, because memories can only do so much. We as humans want to create new memories, new learning experiences. I mean, you can only watch Super Brawl 8 so many times. A few years ago for Christmas, I got my dad a gift card for the WWE Network, and similarly, he only watched Starrcade 97 and a select few episodes of Nitro and a few other WCW pay-per-views. Wrestling had just changed and left us behind. Don't get me wrong about wrestling, though. There was still a love in my heart for it. When I met my wife, one of the first things we realized we had in common was our love of Shawn Michaels and for wrestling in general. She was definitely a WWF girl, and that was surely okay, because by the time the Attitude Era kicked off in the late 90s, I was almost fully on Team WWF as well. If it wasn't for her putting wrestling on TV or seeing that NXT was going to be putting on a house show at the community center down the road from our house, you probably wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. If you bought cards from Chairshot Cards on Whatnot, thank my wife. That's me. I sell AEW trading cards on Whatnot, and if it wasn't for my wife deciding to put AEW on TV one night, so many things in my life would be different. Before this, we'd put on Raw and SmackDown a few times over the years to check out, and we just couldn't enjoy it. We decided that wrestling simply just wasn't good anymore, but then one night she just decided to put AEW on. At work, I would tend to wear quite a few old-school wrestling t-shirts, and people would spot them and ask what I thought of AEW, but I'd only ever heard of it at that point, never checked it out. They'd always tell me if I was into old-school wrestling, I should definitely give it a try, but I'd always just say, yeah, I'll check it out eventually, but then I never would. When she put Dynamite on this night, something about it immediately drew me in. I was fresh-faced in this promotion. It was all brand new to me. I remember seeing Jungle Boy in the ring cutting a heel promo, and my wife came into the living room and I told her, this guy's a fucking jerk. And then I realized that I was already getting worked by this company. I was already back on the wagon. I was immediately falling into the storylines and enjoying the in-ring action. I had been gone from wrestling for so long that everything seemed fresh and new to me. I was completely blown away. And then I saw Sting. I couldn't believe it. I heard that Sting was in AEW, but I wasn't watching. I'd already decided at the time that wrestling was just dead. It wasn't for me, I had thought. But seeing Sting on screen, I just couldn't believe it. I literally couldn't believe it. I had totally forgotten about him being on the roster. It was a trip down memory lane, and what was more was he could still work. I've been a fan of AEW ever since. Back this past December, that's 2023 for those listening in the future, I went to the New Year's Smash edition of AEW Dynamite, and at that point Sting hadn't been on TV in weeks. Darby Allin was training to climb Mount Everest, and the possibility of them being present was the furthest thing from my mind. It just didn't seem to be in the cards. Maybe I'd see Darby next time, but I'd unfortunately never see Sting. I told my dad that we were going to the show, and we were pretty close to the ring if he wanted to watch on TV and try to see us. So I thought there was no chance I'd be seeing Sting, and that was okay with me. I wasn't expecting it, so it's not like I felt cheated. I had never seen Sting in real life before, not even when I was an obsessed little kid. I mean, most people go their entire lives without ever laying eyes on their hero's actual person in the same room, the same air. We all see lots of people on TV we'd love to meet, but there's always the matter of the camera, the screen, the cable connection, etc. But then, on this night, the lights shut off in the arena, and I thought to myself, oh, here comes the House of Black, but that seems strange to me. It must be someone else. Since when does the House of Black have beef with the Don Callis family and Ricky Starks and Big Bill? Through the darkness, I could just barely make out a purple figure moving by the apron. Then suddenly the lights came back on, and I saw Darby Allin in the ring while an older figure in black entered between the ropes. It was Sting. I couldn't believe my eyes. You can actually see me in the Dynamite broadcast by the back left turnbuckle throwing my hands up in the air out of complete shock. I'm wearing my hair up in a bun, and I have glasses and a beard. I took my hands out of their outstretched position and put them on top of my head as I tried with everything in me to keep from punching out everyone around me. I mean, I was completely and totally fucking hyped beyond fuck, bro. They made short work of everyone in the ring, Sting wielding the baseball bat like he did so many times against members of the NWO, fighting for justice, fighting for his friends, fighting for what he believed in. My wife was completely stoked too, but she didn't realize what this meant to me. I had now seen my childhood hero in real life. I had seen him with my own eyes, not through a TV set, not through a phone screen, with my own actual fucking eyes. He was real, he was 20 feet away, and he was still everything I had remembered him being all throughout my life from the time I was 6 years old. When the segment ended, we sat back down and my wife, still buzzing, turned to me and shouted, "I almost cried when I saw them." Just as she said this, I was wiping tears away from my eyes. This was an emotional moment for me. You guys didn't see on TV, but after the segment ended, Sting and Darby celebrated in the ring. Sting stood for a few moments so everyone could get their pictures, and in those moments, it hit me that I had seen Sting after all this time. It was the first time and most likely the last. Before Sting and Darby left the ring, I took a few pictures of the action and their celebrations, and before I put my phone away, I got a Facebook Messenger notification from my dad that just read, in all caps, "Sting," with about 10 eyes. My dad was super pumped. I told him about how I had teared up when I saw him, and he replied that he had actually teared up at home seeing his favorite wrestler on TV after all these years. I think it probably also meant a lot to him for me to be able to see him in person. When we, the wrestling community, had initially found out that Revolution 2024 was to be Sting's final match, I think we all sort of thought, at least that's quite a ways away. I know I did. But now sitting here knowing that today is the day, I'm filled with a lot of memories and feelings. I could go on for hours about things completely unrelated to wrestling, yet are still so completely interwoven with the threads of Sting and WCW that make up my childhood, but I'll spare you the details of how Kanan and Kel in Tomb Raider 2 are almost equal in their nostalgic kicks for me. This past Wednesday, Sting's last Dynamite, in preparation for the unknown, I had a few drinks to settle into the show, fully preparing myself for whatever emotional ride AEW had planned for this momentous occasion. When the Young Bucks made their way to the ring and Darby Allin revealed himself to be hiding behind a Sting mask, my wife wondered out loud, "Is he gonna come out from under the ring?" And then it hit me. This is no exaggeration. I gasped at the top of my lungs as I realized there was only one way our hero could enter on a night like this, with everything at stake, a career nearing its end. "He's going to come down from the rafters," I shouted at the TV. Suddenly the camera cut to the view of Sting descended from the ceiling. The scene sent chills through my body and goosebumps down my arms. I couldn't believe it. I had called it, yet seeing it actually happen for the first time in so long, it was truly unbelievable. "He did it," I said as my wife looked over to see me wiping my eyes. I'm really a sucker for things like this. I'm sure the beers didn't do me any favors in terms of controlling how I felt, but I didn't care. This was a huge moment for all of us. On the countdown to Revolution this past Friday night, they really painted a beautiful picture of Sting's career. Sure, they didn't have any WCW footage on hand, and I can't fault them for it. The impact of the video they played was still the same nonetheless. It's funny, I don't know if any of you ever feel this way, but sometimes things in life just seem to line up and come together in such a way that it almost feels like the entire world is just imaginary, like it's all in my head, like I created it. The music chosen for the video package was performed by Manchester Orchestra, a band I had greatly admired about 12 years ago at a time that I was heavily revisiting wrestling's past on YouTube. That these two worlds collided was unbelievable to me. Wrestling has always proven to be the greatest bonding vessel in my life. From staying up late to watch Nitro and Raw with my dad as a child, to staying up late to watch Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision with my wife, and my dad joining in on discovering AEW, if for nothing more than to see his wrestling idol perform his last few months, wrestling has always brought people together. It's beyond film and music. It's beyond good and bad. It's a spectacle that allows us to look within ourselves and ponder what we could accomplish. We get to see heroes perform for their moment in the sun. We live and die on the outcomes of these choreographed segments, but they're so beyond that in our hearts. For everyone who doesn't understand wrestling, you would have to give it real time to let it all sink in, to fully grasp the gravity of each match, each storyline. For everyone who came in too late to understand the significance of Sting's final match, you probably never will understand. You would have to cram years of viewership into your life to fully understand what Sting means for all of us who lived it. For all the comments on social media about Sting being too old, you've lost the point, and you've lost the moment to share in with the rest of the wrestling community who has seen Sting soar and prosper for nearly 40 years. Sting has proven time and time again since coming to AEW that age is just a number. He's put his body on the line for all of us. He's continued to win accolades and admiration from all of us little Stingers and those experiencing for the first time. Sting is beyond wrestling. Though we have yet to see the last of Sting at the time of me saying this, the only thing that's for sure about Sting is he's touched the hearts of countless wrestling fans throughout his career, and no matter how tonight goes, I will forever be grateful for the impact that Sting has had on wrestling, the industry, and my life. Thank you, Sting. So that's what I wrote, guys. That's all for now. Tomorrow, I'm going to record sort of my feelings on how Revolution goes down, my feelings on Sting's retirement, and see you then. All right, guys. Revolution 2024 is in the history books, and I gotta say, from Zero Hour all the way up to the final bell, that was a fucking hell of a show, dude. Everyone was on their A game, for real, and how can you not be when you've got such an important moment in history at that event? So kicking off Zero Hour, we had the Bang Bang Scissor Gang of Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaimed versus what RJ City called Karen Jarrett's Tupperware. Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh, Jay Lethal, Willie Mack, and Private Party. I always really appreciate seeing Willie Mack. I think that dude is so cool. I just like his demeanor. I think he's pretty good. I like him. Satnam Singh is fucking huge. I forget every time, and then I see him, and I'm like, holy shit. I mean, there was like a little bit of like a stare down at one point with Jay White and Satnam Singh, and Jay White just looked like a child, and then Billy Gunn got in the way and was like a bigger child compared to him. But anyway, Bang Bang Scissor Gang made their entrance, and of course Max Caster didn't get to finish his rap again. They're really making that a thing now. At first I thought, oh, he choked, you know, a couple weeks ago, but I mean, clearly it's becoming a thing now. I thought that they might have been starting a feud between him and Jay White, because last week Jay White sort of bumped into Max, and Max looked visibly annoyed by this, and it seemed like maybe he was gonna try to be like, that was why he was thrown off, like there was some beef with him and Jay. I don't know, but all in all, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang seems strong as hell still. They still seem pretty tight, and they worked well together too. I think the match could have used a little bit more Jay White. He really didn't do much until like the end, like towards the end. Satnam Singh also, he didn't really do like a whole lot, but he doesn't really need to, because as soon as he gets in there, he like kills everybody. So the Bang Bang Scissor Gang took the win on this one. I mean, you have to give it to them. They're just an incredible faction. Then up next, Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale took the W against Julia Hart and Sky Blue. And I am definitely always here for that, because Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale are two of my favorite in the women's division in AEW. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Julia Hart and Sky Blue. I think they could have held off on misting Sky Blue a little bit. I mean, it's helped her with popularity, but I think that they probably could have sort of developed her character a little bit more before having her switch to something else. But nonetheless, I mean, it was a pretty good match. I liked it. So then as Zero Hour came to an end, and we saw like the anti-piracy, the copyright image, I started to get super stoked, man, because I knew that the night already felt different. It felt special. Like, it didn't feel like a normal pay-per-view. It felt, you know, you could feel that like this was an important one. Everybody was already like on top of their game. So to start off the actual body of Revolution 2024, we had Christian Cage versus Daniel Garcia, because they've been beefing a little bit lately. Daniel Garcia came out wearing a jacket with different colored scorpions all over it, which when I saw that, I was like, dude, that is awesome. Showing some respects for the icon. And new ring gear too, some shiny ass pants. I thought they were pretty sweet, to be honest with you. I am like a diehard Daniel Garcia fan. I want to see this guy win. I want to see him get the success that he's really earned But of course, Mama Wayne, Nick Wayne, and Killswitch are at ringside, so I'm already just like, man, there's no way Danny's getting this one. But surprisingly, there wasn't a whole lot of interference in that match. Like, I expected it to be like a complete, like, fuck you, Daniel Garcia. But surprisingly, it wasn't. I mean, obviously, there was interference. Nick Wayne tried to fucking take out Garcia on the outside, and then he ended up flipping over the table and just like fucking dying or something. And you know, I was really hoping that this would have been the night that Killswitch finally turned on Christian Cage, because you know it's coming. You know it's coming. He treats that guy like absolute shit. He's like an animal to him, like Nick Wayne, the protege, and then Mama Wayne and stuff. There's just no room for Killswitch, and I just was hoping this would be the night that he would just take this dude out and Daniel Garcia would get the win. But it did not end up being that way, and it, despite, you know, the disappointment of it not happening, it was a good match. I liked it. Then Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson put on a banger of a match. I was really impressed with this one, and it ended with surprisingly Bryan Danielson shaking Eddie Kingston's hand. I didn't think that he was actually gonna do it. I thought he was gonna, you know, roll out of the ring and just be like, no, I'm still not doing it. But gave him that respect. He even raised his hand up and let, you know, Eddie have his moment in the sun. You know, he earned the respect of Bryan Danielson. And then I don't know if you saw, but there was actually a behind the scenes thing after that where they were getting looked at by medical, and Eddie Kingston saying all he's ever wanted was the respect of the boys, which I felt that, dude. I felt it. And I'm like, you got it, Eddie. And then Eddie leaves the room. I thought Danielson was going to start talking shit about him, but he actually, he put him over. He was like, you know, he did it. He did it. I respect him. It wasn't him I was against. It was, you know, I mean, dude, it was such a great promo. And like, I was just watching it and I'm just like, I love this company. And I'm really curious to see where they go with Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson. I don't know if maybe Bryan Danielson will end up going back on his show of respect and be a piece of shit or what. I don't know. Or maybe they might even team up. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, they're both of similar styles. I think that they could be pretty dominant as a, you know, a tag team or something like that. But then you also got Blackpool on the side. You know, where does that fit into it? Ooh, wouldn't it be something if Danielson and Kingston had a match against Moxley and Claudio? That would be some shit. So then we had the All-Star Scramble match, which was pretty crazy. It was kind of like, you know, it was like four giant guys with four small guys. And then the small guys being Chris Jericho, Hook, Magnus, and Dante Martin got knocked out onto the outside of the ring. And of course, you know, they were down for quite a while as Wardlow, Hobbs, Lance Archer, and Brian Cage battled it out. And it felt like that Meat Madness match that was supposed to be at Revolution but got canceled because Miro and Keith Lee are out with injuries. So that match ended up not happening. But it was kind of like, oh, okay, so this is sort of like that. Like, we're still kind of getting that. But then those four, the four big guys, they're out on the outside of the ring eventually. And then it's Jericho, Hook, Magnus, and Dante Martin, and they're battling out. And they're kind of doing like this, like similar kind of things, like the roadblock lariats. Like, you know, they're each knocking into each other, you know, similar things that you do with like the big guys do, like where they can't knock each other over. And it was a fun match. It went on a little bit longer than I was thinking. I think because they had like the two different weight groups, like size groups, doing like their own individual things at different times. And then they all came together at the end. Obviously, Wardlow came out on top. We all knew that was going to happen because they're trying to put him over lately. And I think it's well deserved because he really has kind of been on the back burner since he's been back. I should also mention that Brian Cage was wearing these tights that had a scorpion on the side, sort of like an abstract scorpion. And then he had his face painted, not like his, you know, Terminator style, like normal, but it was like Surfer Sting, which when I saw that, I was like, dude, that is cool. I really appreciated like all like the little nods that people made to Sting throughout this, because you know that's what it was all about. I thought one of the coolest things about this match though was when Hook got Wardlow in the red rum, and then Wardlow is like laying on his back with like Hook under him, you know, he's like fading, and then Jericho comes over and puts the Walls of Jericho on him while Hook also still has the red rum on him. And then Wardlow got out of it, and like at that point I was like, okay, Wardlow's taking this, because you know how are you gonna have the guy who survived dual submissions lose the match? But yeah, of course Wardlow took the win. I think we all sort of knew that was gonna happen, but there were points where I thought maybe Hook. I mean, obviously I knew Dante Martin wasn't gonna win an AEW World Title shot in this scramble. I thought maybe for a second Jericho. But yeah, there were real moments in this where I thought Hook was going to get it, and it kind of made sense. Like in the back of my head, I'm like, you know, if Hook gets it, it does make sense with like how they were positioning him with Samoa Joe a bit ago. But Wardlow ultimately came out on top, because, you know, that's where it's heading right now. Following up that, we had Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy, apparently, he had to have his rib cage like entirely taped to even be cleared, and when his shirt came off and you could just see all this tape, it's like, holy shit, there's no way if Orange Cassidy wins this, that would be something. I mean, it would be possible, you know, that would show his determination to keep his international title, which we've seen before. I mean, you know, a lot of times Orange Cassidy's just kind of, you know, lackadaisical, you know, he's just like, whatever. But then, you know, there's real moments where he fights for his title, like when he's, you know, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was, maybe was it Full Gear, where he just started kicking the shit out of Moxley like in the face, and he's just like covered in blood. I mean, that was awesome. I'm pretty sure that was Full Gear, but anyway, we're not talking about Full Gear, we're talking about Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy. And of course Roderick Strong went for his back, because Roderick Strong is just like Bane, he's like out to break everybody's backs all the time. That's his main focus in matches. And as good as this match was, I admittedly really do miss broken neck Roderick Strong. I mean, you really just cannot beat that. That was some of the best stuff, especially when you had Matt Taven and Mike Bennett in the mix with Adam Cole when he broke his ankle and stuff. I miss that. That was great. It was only a few months ago, but it feels like forever ago. There were a few moments where it looked like Orange was going to pull through, but Roderick Strong was just annihilating his back. There was a point where Orange Cassidy nailed a pretty sick crossbody off the top rope, and then immediately he's just like German suplexed into fucking ragdoll dead style. Then there was that point there after this, I knew it had to just be over, because there was that point where Orange Cassidy is up on the top rope. Well, he's climbing up the top rope. Roderick Strong comes up on the inside, climbing the ropes, and yeah, I fucking nails Orange Cassidy with a gut wrench onto like the top rope, and Orange just like falls to the mat, and like visibly, like he is hurting. He's like freaking the fuck out, like kicking around, holding his back and stuff like that. And I just felt for that guy. I felt for him so bad. He ended up getting some momentum later and even nailing a pretty sick diving DDT off the top rope, but not even the Orange punch could put Roderick Strong away. I mean, there was a point where Orange had him pinned, and like it looked for real like he was gonna get it, and then at the very last second, it was like 2.9, Roddy puts his foot up on the rope. Ultimately Orange Cassidy suffered to the Strong Breaker, and I think that Orange Cassidy's probably gonna need to take some time off after this, because I think he's legitimately messed up from this. I think he dropped the title because Orange Cassidy really gets injured a lot. The nature of his matches just end up with him getting injured. And I think he dropped the title because he needs to just take some time for himself. And you know what? That's fine with me, because I appreciate Orange Cassidy. Next up, we have Blackpool Combat Club versus FTR, with Jon Moxley and Claudio making their way to the ring through the crowd like they always do, but they're wearing fucking Road Warriors football pads. Dude, I thought this was... when I saw that, I'm like, yes! Yes, like it wasn't Sting, but it was almost like of the era when Sting started, because you know Sting used to tag with Jim Hellwig before he was the Ultimate Warrior, and like their big aspiration was like to get a match with the Road Warriors. I mean, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but that was what I thought. That was what it made me think of, and I thought it was a cool look for them to have, especially as a tag team. I mean, you really couldn't beat it. Fortunately, it wasn't a Road Warriors match, because I cannot stand squash matches. Wardlow has definitely had a few of them recently in AEW, but I'll let those slide, because that's like against local talent. It's not like he's going out there and just fucking laying waste to, you know, Samoa Joe in 5 seconds. But that's neither here nor there. Moxley really demonstrated the Blackpool Combat Club's emphasis on technicality. I mean, he was fighting a super technical match. Lots of submission holds, front face locks and stuff. Cash Wheeler got in there first, and Mox and Claudio just kept taking turns just destroying this guy. At one point, Moxley gets Cash into sort of like a stretch muffler figure four type hold, but now I'm kind of thinking more like in hindsight, it was sort of like a Texas cloverleaf, but like on his stomach. And then he added a head scissors into it, which was super cool looking. Very technical style being shown by Moxley. And then at one point, Moxley has Cash on the mat in the corner and just gives him the finger point blank range and smacks him and says, "I don't think you're shit. I don't think your partner's shit." And I'm just like, yes! Here we go. This is what Moxley excels at. Like, the guy comes off so real sometimes when he's doing this. Like, I don't know how there isn't beef backstage. So eventually Cash Wheeler finally gets to tag in Dax, who is the fresh man, and he starts nailing some of those patented Dax hardwood punches. Gets Claudio into the corner, starts nailing him with chops. I mean, the pace of this is really picking up now. There's a little back and forth. Claudio has the lead. Dax has the lead. Claudio, Dax, Claudio, Dax. Then Claudio sends Dax into the ring post where he busts his head completely open. It's like they were backstage and Moxley was like, "Yeah, you know what, guys? I'm not going to bleed tonight." So Dax was like, "Hey, I'll bleed for all four of us." I mean, later on, Claudio ends up getting Dax in the big spin. And I was like for real concerned that like with the amount of blood that Dax had lost that it would just be flinging all over the front row or something. Moxley finishes up the big spin with a drop kick and pins him, and then Dax still kicks out. It was like a for real like LFG moment. Definitely one of the coolest parts of this was when Moxley hits Dax hardwood with a Death Rider, lays back on him to pin him and gets a two count, and then Dax rolls over on him and cradles him for a two count. Then Moxley immediately gets Dax into a rear naked chokehold. Cash goes in to try to break the hold, and Claudio follows him inside and gets him in the same rear naked choke. Dax Harwood's face is beat red, and there's even more blood coming out now. But ultimately, Blackpool Combat Club won, and I'm sure Dax Harwood went to the back to eat some cookies to replenish some of the blood that he lost. But this was an exciting and pretty brutal back and forth contest, and definitely lived up to the hype that I at least had for it. Up next was Timeless Stoney Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo. And honestly, this was probably the only match in the night that I wasn't just in super LFG mode. Both of them are super talented, I think, but I just could not get behind this one. It was not exciting. I couldn't even tell you looking back like what really all happened in it. I was disappointed because I thought there would be a lot more to it. There's something about some of these in the women's division, those who lean super into technical wrestling, that it just sort of slows the match down too much, and like the pacing, it happens with a lot of Serena Deeb's matches. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a decent match, but it really didn't live up to, in my mind, the excitement of the rest of the card. I think probably the most exciting part was when Toni Storm's old music played, and then for a second I thought it was actually like Toni Storm in her old ring gear, but it was Mariah May, but I was like, oh, that was pretty fucking cool. And in the end, Toni Storm took home the win. She kept the title, she retained. I would be interested in a rematch between these two, because I do think, like I was saying, that they're both talented, but just they just could not nail it at Revolution. Next up was Will Ospreay versus Kenosuke Takeshita, and I gotta say, this was by far one of the most exciting matches in years, I think. This was huge. This was easily 5-star. The pacing was right on point. It was super fast, and then it would slow down for a little bit, then it gets super fast again. This was one of those matches where like the rate of selling moves was lower because you sort of have to keep the pacing there and keep it exciting. I know a lot of people were talking about how they were just like no selling everything, but I think in a match like this, like it makes sense with the pacing, but also with how fast they're going, they would have so much adrenaline that I feel like in reality they would just kind of bounce right back up because, you know, they're fighting for their lives. There was really too much in this match for me to even pinpoint like one thing that really stood out. I mean, honestly, I couldn't even say anything to do it justice. It's just something that you would have to see. You'd have to see it for yourself. And if you did see it, I mean, you know how awesome it was. I think Ospreay is a great sign. I think he's going to really make a pretty big impact at AEW. I was just all around super impressed with both of them. I knew Takeshita was good, but when I saw him performing in this match, I was like, God damn, like, I can't even believe these two. You know what? I'm just going to leave it at that and say check it out for yourself because I can't do anything to do it justice. It was like that good. It's probably one of the best matches I've seen in, you know, easily top 10 matches I've probably ever seen. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous and a lot of you are probably like, well, you must not know wrestling, but dude, you got to check that out. That was something. By the way, Will Ospreay won. I forgot to mention that part because I was reminiscing on how awesome it was. I mean, this was the longest match of the night, and it felt like one of the shortest because of how fast-paced it was, and it was just all-around exciting, dude. Like, I loved it. So after that was the semi-main event of Swerve Strickland versus Samoa Joe versus Hangman Adam Page. And this definitely turned out to be a pretty good one. It kind of advanced the story of Adam Page and Swerve. I mean, there were times where, you know, Hangman ended up on the outside, and then it was just Swerve versus Samoa Joe. And then there were times where Swerve was on the outside, and it was just Hangman versus Joe, which I thought was really cool because it was kind of like showing us what it could have been like, because originally the main event was supposed to be just one-on-one, whether it be Joe and Swerve or Joe and Hangman. And there were times where Hangman and Swerve actually teamed up together against Joe, but then they would quickly remember like the hatred, and then they would start going at each other, and Joe would definitely take advantage of this. I mean, it was done really well. I was expecting to see like buckets of blood based on, you know, how Swerve and Hangman matches usually tend to go, especially full gear, but nothing like that here. Ultimately, Hangman ended up tapping out to a rear choke by Samoa Joe, and what was awesome that Excalibur said after the match was he sort of pondered, did Hangman tap because he couldn't take it anymore, or did he tap because he didn't want to give Swerve the chance to win? Which I thought was a sick take on that. That really kind of added to the story, like in itself, just that. And I was definitely glad to see there was still some hate between Swerve and Hangman, because I mean, I really don't want them to drop that. That's been really something. That's been a ride for sure. So with Joe retaining the title, it was now time for the main event. Sting's final match. Matthew and Nicholas made their way to the ring. The crowd was fucking booing them big style. And then Darby came out and he stopped about halfway down the ramp and turned back up to look at the Tron. And then they started to play a video package of a theater marquee that said the final showtime. And they showed a poster hanging up with a scorpion, said the final showtime. Then you see a curtain spreading, and you see from a projector, you see a scorpion, you know, Sting's logo. And I'm like, oh man, here we go. Then you see the Stinger come in, take a seat. They start playing footage from Sting in New Japan in the 90s as Surfer Sting. Then you start seeing pictures of him in WCW as Crow Sting, you know, with Luger and Flair. And they keep showing, you know, Sting reacting to it, you know, like laughing and sort of wincing at the pain at, you know, a table spot. And all the while, this piano song is playing, and I'm just like watching this, and I'm like, man, I can't believe it. I can't believe it's the end, dude. So the video package, well, what he's watching in the theater ends, curtain starts to close, Scorpion logo disappears, and then Sting's left alone in the theater, and then he says, quietly to himself, somberly almost, he says, it's showtime. Then he says, it's showtime for the last time. And he starts to get an angry sort of look on his face, like he means fucking business, dude. And he looks at the camera and he says, let's do this. Huge pop. Crowd's going crazy. Then all of a sudden, in the arena, Sting's music starts playing. Then his oldest son, Garrett, makes his way to the entrance ramp dressed as the red, white, and blue, you know, the American flag looking surfer Sting. And the camera is panned so far back that for a split second, I'm like, no fucking way, dude. Did Sting really come out as surfer Sting? But it was just Garrett. And then he's joined by Steve Jr., who's got the red and black Wolfpack Sting gear going on. And I'm just like, dude, this is fucking awesome. And then Sting's AEW theme fades out, and then all of a sudden we hear the familiar guitar of Seek and Destroy by Metallica start playing, you know, the same theme that he used as his entrance at All In at Wembley, same one that he had a knockoff of when he was in WCW, and I'm just like, dude, oh my god! Crowd is going apeshit. Sting and his sons make their way to the ring. The crowd is just on their feet, dude. Everybody's just hyped for this. He gets into the ring. Darby just fucking launches straight out at the Young Bucks, who are on the outside. And at this point, I'm just in pure LFG mode. This match was perfect. I mean, you could not have done it any better. I know a lot of people thought that it was going to be sort of something embarrassing for some reason, you know. I mean, when you get up there in age, sometimes these retirement matches are just sort of almost like a something pitiful, you know. There's something else, you know, that doesn't really live up to the hype of the wrestler that who is retiring. But this one was completely different from that, man. They really told a great story with this one. You know, a lot of times I feel like that's a lost art in a way, you know, using the match, the pacing, you know, the back and forth to really tell a story. And these guys were fucking cooking. I mean, the Young Bucks was the perfect choice. I know a lot of people were pissed when they announced it, but you really could not go wrong with this, man. This was absolutely perfect. They were fucking cooking. They were battling out in the crowd. They go up on the entrance ramp. Nick hits Darby with a Falcon Arrow through a table off the ramp. Fucking took him out. Then Matt and Sting are battling at the other end. Matt hits Sting with a suplex off the ramp through two tables with some production equipment on it, dude. I'm just like, this is fucking crazy, dude. And then Sting's out of commission for a little bit, so Darby's battling it out in the ring. There's just fucking weapons, tables, ladders all over the place. You saw that sick ass dive that Darby took off the ladder when he was trying to go for them, and he ended up going. It was similar to like that Jeff Hardy spot where Jeff moved and Darby went through the tables, except this time there was a pane of glass and not tables, chairs. That's what I meant. Darby rolls over and he's just fucking lacerated as fuck, dude. He is just bleeding like crazy. Sting makes his way back into the ring, straight back into the action, taking on Matt and Nick himself. And like I was saying before, the back and forth in this was just so incredible, dude. Like, you'd have both the Young Bucks taking him out, or he would be just fighting one of them. And there was so many pin attempts here, and it would look like Sting was put away, and then he'd kick out at two. At one point, he actually even kicked out at one. He got the EVP trigger twice and kicked out. And it wasn't even like those shitty, like, oh, give me a break. There's no way. The crowd was here for it. And Sting is just sitting up. He's beating his chest like a fucking animal. Dude, you can tell I'm hyped from this. This match was everything, dude. It was perfect. Sting goes through a table at one point, and then he just gets up and throws the table away. Crowd is popping like crazy. At one point, Flair comes out because Sting was thrown through a pane of glass in the corner, and Ric Flair gets his way into the ring and tries to cover him up. The fucking Young Bucks took out Steamboat, took out Flair. Just showing absolutely no respect for these veterans, dude. Getting heat like crazy. It was wild, dude. They are going to be even more hated than they were before. Matt's in the ring with Sting. Nick starts climbing up on the top rope to jump on him. And then Darby comes up out of nowhere. I thought this dude was dead. Pushes Nick off the top rope, goes through a fucking table. Sting nails Matt with the Scorpion Death Drop, gets a two count. Then he grabs his legs like he's setting up for the sharpshooter. Darby goes off the top rope, coffin drop, rolls off. Sting locks in the Scorpion Death Lock, and Matt tries fighting it, but then he eventually just gives up and taps. Crowd is on their feet. I live in Florida. I probably, if I had gone outside, probably could have heard it. Dude, it was fucking wild. It was a huge moment. I was so happy that he got the win, because so many times, like in a retirement match, they just, you know, on their way out, they just put them over. Kind of like how Danielson, because he's supposed to be retiring soon, kind of like he put over Kingston by finally showing him that respect, which I love. I love. I think that the older generation should, you know, help put over the new guys. But not in this case, dude. I kind of disagree. I'm glad that he won. He went out like the fucking hero that he is. He got to make a speech. I know it's controversial. Everyone's pretty mad about it. It got cut off because they only have so much time allotted on pay-per-views. It ended up getting cut off. We did get to see it, though, on YouTube. It was uploaded. We did get to see it. I know I was a little disappointed. I know some people were even more disappointed. Some people were fucking straight up saying they're never watching AEW again. I mean, yeah, you fucking are. But dude, just all around great match. And I'm glad that my childhood hero got to end his career the way that he wanted to. Not that run that he had in WWE. That was garbage, dude. They did him so dirty. But I am so glad that he got to go out on top. And in the end, the entire locker room was on the entrance ramp clapping for him. You see Dax Harwood looks like he's crying. I mean, dude. They're grown men crying in the audience. I just, you know, you can't blame him. You just saw something huge. He was a hero. He still is for, you know, so many of us, and we grew up watching him. And I wish I could have been there, but even just being at home, it, you know, I felt like I was part of something special. One thing that I thought was really cool that I found out after is that the deputy director of the Greensboro Coliseum actually had black baseball bats engraved for Sting, Darby, Tony Khan, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and I just thought that was a really cool gift, because, like, obviously, he really means a lot to people, and I just thought that was, you know, something really nice. And then this city something, I can't remember, I'm sorry, but somebody who works for the city of Greensboro gave Sting a plaque with a proclamation that was now officially known as Thank You Sting Day, which it was just special all around. It was kind of, you know, one of those moments that you just want to live in for a while. So guys, that was AEW Revolution 2024. The end of an era, farewell to an icon, one of the most exciting pay-per-views that I've ever seen. Will Ospreay versus Takeshita, I think was a close second. I mean, you know, you have to give Sting's final match to the number one spot. Second, very, very close behind, was Takeshita versus Ospreay. I mean, that was really something. But just a super exciting show. I wish I could have been there to see it in person. It was, even just sitting at home in, you know, the living room, I was just fucking, dude, it was great. If you haven't seen it, you gotta get it. You gotta get the replay on Bleacher Report or wherever you can get it. It was just great. I highly recommend it. I've watched Sting's match and Ospreay versus Takeshita, and then the three-way dance for the world title about four times since then, and it's Wednesday. And speaking of Wednesday, Dynamite tonight is supposed to be the official unveiling of the new Dynamite logo. I say official because it was accidentally unveiled a few weeks ago to us, but hey, that's still something. And in other news, you may have seen, but Sammy Guevara is suspended following that botched shooting star press on Jeff Hardy. He wasn't suspended for the move, but I guess afterwards, instead of giving Jeff time to sort of recover and for medical to check him out, he picked him up and went for the GTH, and I guess that goes against their concussion protocol. It's hard to say, because I also read that it may have been suspected that Jeff may have had concussion-like symptoms before the shooting star press. I'm not really sure, but either way, Sammy is on his third suspension. Rob Van Dam pointed out that when you do a high-risk move like that and you fuck it up, it's on you because you're the one who brought the move into the match. No official word on how long Sammy is suspended. I think we'll see him relatively soon. Sammy hasn't released any statements or anything about it. Also, at the media scrum after Revolution, Tony Khan addressed the rumor that Ricky Starks has left AEW, saying that Ricky Starks still is under AEW contract, and he doesn't know where that rumor came from, but he said it's just a rumor. Ricky Starks is still in AEW. And Tony Khan has also announced that despite that very visible back injury that Will Ospreay suffered at Revolution, he is cleared to perform. So that's definitely some good news. All right, guys, and that's all for today. Thank you for checking it out. See you next time.